Hi, folks. Welcome back to another episode of Curses and Crossroads. As we get going with this episode, I just wanted to do a quick little prelude to kind of give you some heads up about some noise content warning. We specifically have some destruction noises, so buildings collapsing and moving, as well as some mechanical music later on in the episode towards the end, with repeated notes. So if you have any sensory issues related to that, please go forward with caution. We also will be discussing themes of loss and violence, specifically fantasy violence, but we want to be inclusive to all folks, so please proceed with caution as we are entering into a battle scene through the rest of this arc. We appreciate the love and support and the patience that you have had as we have gotten these episodes out a little bit later than normal. But without further ado, we just wanted to say thank you for joining us in this space once again, and we hope you have a wonderful time listening to the episode. And we will see you on the road.
Hello, friends.
Hello, friends.
Howdy. Welcome to Curses of Crossroads. This is a podcast about dice. Today we're reviewing these dice I got on Amazon.
They're loud. Oh, that scared the shit out of me. I wasn't expecting that.
They're loud. They got a tiger and a dragon on them. Overall, C+. Good dice. Lots of them. Some of the colors are bad.
Okay, I'm like, what dropped it so low? Jesus. It was their lack of
that
Jesus.
That was a 20 set package. I don't have a problem. Most of the sets ended up in my player's dice bag, which is over there, staring at me.
I'm not saying you have a problem. I'm just saying I think it's the opposite of a solution.
See, I need to get a real set of dice. Like, that I personally own, because I don't have any.
Yo, congratulations. I have infinite dice. You can take however many you want.
Well, yes, but, like, I need a set at my house, so I kind of want to order one as an excuse.
That's fair. When last we left our heroes, some fucking shit went down with Odin. Maybe.
We started a war.
You didn't start a war. You were drafted. Fucking Odin was there. Whoa, now you're in a lighthouse. Well, all the time. One day, I'll be able to like do a concise intro, but it's not today because pomegranate margaritas.
Valid. The best reason to not do things.
That's also probably why this part of my note says quetchies instead of questions.
Oh, the quetchies.
Got answer my quetchies. So, we ended day zero last time on the 7-day siege that the general promised, and then you're free to go. Day one is y'all deciding who goes where.
Day one, war's begun. Come on, Johnny, get your guns. Ignore that. Cut that audio.
Jonathan Sims. Listen to the Magnus Archives. It's very gay. It's also very good.
Everything's gay.
Do you like a horror anthology that slowly becomes a radio drama? Fucking, I do. Day one, you gotta tell people where to go. For whatever reason, you have been entrusted to guide people, probably because your combat experience so far has been stellar.
That's luck. Literally, in a couple times, that's all luck.
One of you used a fucking anime final attack. Like, a secret hidden move. It kicked ass.
It was super badass.
Fucking Dragon Nuke. Ball Hoomst. So here's who you have to command. Digby and Company. The Olivine Four. Troy Bowles' gang. And Sprig.
Sprig!
Yes, Sprig will be helping.
I love Sprig.
Sprig kicks ass. Sprig as a unit. Sprig.
Sprig as number 32 through 64.
That's valid. Sprig has split themselves into multitudes in order to function as like a military unit as a part, as opposed to a individual. Places you need to defend are the shore, which is where most of the fighting is going to happen. This invasion is coming in from the sea. Most of the fighting is also going to happen around the lighthouse. So forces that you send to the shore will be doing most of the frontline fighting, but they will also be closest to you personally. Okay. The second is the arcade, which is being used as a triage tent, thanks to Jessnell the programmer and her spidery magics. Whoever you set there is honestly most likely to fully survive because they're like actively guarding the triage, so they're more likely to be...
They're babysat.
Yes, they are effectively... Yeah, they are closest to medical help, basically. But they will also be doing a fair number of fighting because your opponents are inhuman and will actively target hospitals. And then you can place as many units as you want in the forest, because while you are being on the borders of the town, because while you are being attacked by outsiders, there are things in the woods.
So we need someone patrolling
the
woods.
And just because there's a war right now does not mean the monsters in the woods are going to respect that.
Wow, what dicks. I thought we'd have like some same planet solidarity fuckers.
Nope. No, these aren't the monsters you're used to fighting who are like, this is my motivation. These are animals. These are the fey version of animals.
Attracted to corpses and just want to munch and crunch.
Yes. So whoever you place in the forest is going to experience low combat, but the combat they experience is going to be intense, and they are more than likely going to be ambushed. The last place is backup for one of the other places.
So you have like a fallback point?
Yes. If the worst happens to the people there, you get to send in the backup.
Oh, it's hardly that. I was kind of thinking Sprig should be on the shore.
Yeah, I was thinking front lines.
They fought something like this before, yes.
What if... Okay, this is just for taking care of the forest. What if we send the Bigby's crew? Yeah, because they've been protecting this town for a while, they said, so they're used to whatever is in there.
Oh, I should mention that the Larksu clan is with Troibel as kind of like a Hollow Street militia.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sprig or the Alving, all the children's that aren't children.
All right. That leaves Digby and Co. in the woods.
Garrett.
Yes.
Is this how you thought we would place everybody? Is this going
I'm going to lock in your answers.
We can't change them.
I was maybe thinking Digby and Co. and Hollow Street would switch, but I do like where you put everybody. I think that's going to be really interesting. I was also like 50-50 on you putting Olivine. I will also say that I called the Olivine for being on the shore and not Sprig, but that's okay. I do genuinely enjoy your... This is a good plan you have.
Choices.
Yes. Okay. I will also let you move... I'll let you treat the Olive Line 4 as backup for all three defensible locations, because it's ridiculous to just have them like sitting by if something goes bad.
Twiddle your thumbs, friends. You'll be useful soon.
And then if shit goes bad. Okay. So that's all of day one. You devising this battle plan, you drawing lines in the map, you giving troop orders to your friends and colleagues. Day two changes that.
Right. Immediately uncomfortable.
It is dawn, and you are all awakened by a terrible penetrating vibration. It reaches into your chest. You can feel it, this violent humming in the air, and things change. Buildings snap together. Distances close instantaneously. There is little time to react. Geography, space itself is collapsing and twisting and moving. And as the sun fully rises, the consequences of this take place. Streets explode as they are combined together. Buildings erupt into shrapnel to form chimera of the two that they had once been. The arcade is fine. The woods are now significantly closer to the lighthouse than they were. And the lighthouse itself has been moved pretty far into the sea. The shore is still accessible, but through something of a land bridge.
Huh.
Which means now there's potentially a fourth location, which is the land bridge itself. You can have Sprig continue to defend both the shoreline and the bridge, or you can assign the Olivine Four to stop being general backup and to guard the bridge itself.
My immediate thought is I'm confident in our combat abilities. So like the land bridge, if something does happen between Sprig and us, I feel like we could handle it. And if we needed to, we could call on them. But also I kind of like the idea of them being our ace in the hole for like if the woods crew gets ambushed or the arcade gets hit, then we can send them over. Like they're not worried about abandoning that post.
Okay, most of day two is dealing with that. No one was injured in any of the sudden explosions of the matter. But a lot of the geography changed, and that means a lot of like movement and a lot of repositioning, and that takes up the entirety of day two. Day three, things start gathering outside the town. The woods crew encounters just a horrifically sized creature. It has these stubby furry legs and this giant turtle shell and a lion's head on this long scaly neck and this huge snake head coming out of where its tail should be. And they are able to down the creature. However, I am going to need Rachel to roll flat 2d6. It's a 2. Okay. Giving orders, Troibel makes a slight miscalculation about the monster's capabilities, and rather than lose his unit... Oh, Digby is at the woods. My bad. God, I need to change my arrows up. Hold on. Okay. In that case, it should actually be Flemeth who rolls.
We get a second chance, y'all. delete that audio? I don't know.
Yeah, delete that.
Son of a fucking bitch.
Oh no.
It's 4.
Destined tragedy at the woods. Digby and Co. are able to hold off the monster. However, the girl that Eden attacked and Digby sustained critical injuries. They are not dead yet, but they will be in triage.
Okay. They're just a little banged up. You just rub some polish on them. Good as new.
It's not bad.
No. Only 2 people getting not even killed. They got hurt. We're good.
Okay. Surrounding the outskirts of the town and peeking their heads out from the shore are creatures you have heard described vaguely creatures that are unerringly long, disturbingly proportioned, things that have too many heads and too many eyes, and jaws that open where there shouldn't be bones that allow that. These creatures are forming rank and file under some kind of command that neither of you, that any of you, can discern. But they are forming strict lines. They are preparing. After the attack, so is everyone within Foghorn, and that is most of your day, dealing with the tragedy of the attack in the woods and preparing for something terrible come dusk or dawn. As you bed down for the night, you notice that the mold inside of the lighthouse has grown. This odd, sickly purple mold is spreading throughout the lighthouse. It's becoming ropey. It's thick, and it's forming these veins, these fluid-filled purple veins that are now stretching through the lighthouse like a spider web, like arteries.
Right? I'm like, guys, we have to burn down the house and run around for an entire episode.
I don't even know.
Before I continue, does everybody remember the name of the demon?
Aerovolt.
Caroline made a pact with.
Zagmoy?
Do you remember the demon's domain?
Zagmoy, the demon of pestilence and rot, or...
Oh,
mushrooms.
No, not. Nothing as broad as pestilent or rot. No, it is specifically fungus. Nothing happens, but it is growing, and it is spreading.
So, can I roll to, like, draw some angelic seals? Sigils?
If you want to go that route, yes, you can roll to use magic.
It's either that or burn it with hellfire. No, we're doing seals. Haha! 6 and 4. So, 13.
Okay, with a 13, no effect. Yeah, you were able to bar a monster from entry. You're able to seal up and kind of wither what veins exist. Outside the lighthouse is not as safe. You're able to pretty much clear the inside, but the outside is rough. As you end day three, what those of you who survive remember as the longest day begins.